from Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 84, recorded December the 10th, 2024. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and with me, again, West Coast editor at Vulture, Joseph Adalian. Joe, welcome back to Downstream.
Thank you, sir. I feel like I should call you MC Snell now, you know?
The master of ceremonies. I mean, maybe this is the listeners chose this this title for me, and I'm willing to go with it.
MCs are a big deal. I watch a lot of game shows, and you have to have a good MC at the center. So
it's true. You do. So let's talk about the future of Disney. You actually wrote a piece about this on Vulture. Bob Iger's grand streaming vision is finally coming together. The big news peg here is that this week the ESPN Plus tile came to the Disney Plus app. So they did that with Hulu a little while ago. Now it's happened with ESPN. Disney sort of pushing the bundle contents onto the mothership app, which is the Disney Plus app. And, you know, your piece at Vulture talks a lot about sort of, you know, there was a time when Bob Iger said, no, we don't want to do that. Or Disney said, no, we don't want to do that. One big bundle. No. And you know, things have changed. The world has changed. So now you can watch your Peyton Manning, Bill Belichick conversations in the Disney Plus app. You can watch The Simpsons playing NFL football, which happened last night. It was terrible, on the Disney Plus app. So tell me, where are we and where is Disney going with this seeming sort of like goal to pour everything into the one app?
Well, I mean, in some ways, it's not a complete departure, even though I wrote that it was a change from what Iger said, you know, 5-6 years ago, just before the launch of Disney Plus, where he said, you know, we're going to be more consumer friendly and not sort of squeeze one big app down everyone's throats, and we're going to give you choice. And it's true, he did. And to his credit, Disney still gives you choice. Although if you only want one app like Disney Plus or Hulu, you're going to pay a crap ton more than you would have 5 years ago for just that one app. So there's a lot of incentive to upgrade to the bundle for just a $1 more or $2 more, if it's maybe $4 more if you want sports too. You know, it's a realization that, first of all, what's happened is that streaming overall has gotten more expensive, and you do have, you know, Netflix now charging for its premium subscribers something upwards of $20 a month. Disney's got maturity in the market. They've proven themselves. They can afford to sort of use their ecosystem to sort of basically offer audiences who want it one-stop shopping convenience. And it does make a lot of sense because there are so many more apps than there were when Disney Plus first launched. And they're more robust. And if you can sort of curate a single experience, it's easier for audiences because, look, you know, streaming is sort of the new cable. You didn't have to go and sign up for 8 different cable systems to get your various cable networks that you wanted. You signed up for one cable platform and you watch different channels. So now Disney is basically offering 3 big channels in one platform. And it's more logical. Unless you super are only into just family-friendly stuff and just want Disney Plus, or if you absolutely hate anything that's from Marvel or Star Wars ESPN and you just want Hulu, then okay, you can, if you like your health plan, you can stick with it. If you like your standalone streaming app right now, you can stick with it. But for a lot of people, it's just going to make sense to sort of say, oh yeah, I didn't realize this is a cost-effective way of doing it. Plus, it also helps unlock value for subscribers. When you see all this stuff in one place, you realize, oh, I didn't realize that there was a new episode of Abbott Elementary on because I haven't opened Hulu in because Hulu hasn't had a great original lately, so I might have forgotten about that show. Or, you might not even think to open ESPN because it's a lot smaller. So it allows them to cross-promote and market it. Disney had, and I promise this will be the end of my filibuster here, Disney sort of had a problem early on in America because its brand is so focused on family. The American audiences are a little more conservative than many other places in the world. They couldn't do what they've done in other parts of the world, which I should back up and say, in other parts of the world, right. This is nothing new. All of Disney's streaming content operated under an app called, originally it was Star Disney Plus, whatever, but it was one place. And so Europeans, being very European, they didn't mind seeing some Ryan Murphy shock show right next to the Mickey Mouse Club. It was great. Who cares? You know, the kids should see this sort of debauchery. Disney had to build up to that. They had to get people locked in, get used to it. So they first started with Hulu, and they have all sorts of robust parental protections. Even then, some people are complaining because, you know, everyone's going to complain. No one got the memo or missed the email about setting your parental.
They send me so many emails when they change anything about it. Yeah. I got a whole email about parental controls, and I don't even have kid accounts in there because my kids are adults now. But they are, I think they've done a very good job. You can see how concerned they are about it, that they have done a lot of communicating and over communicating about the addition of parental controls and limiting what people can see and the contents of live TV. And even like ESPN Plus has live sporting events and we can't control all the content on there. So you're going to need to make it like, I think they've done, they've gone out of their way to do a good job.
Right. Yeah. And so for now, though, it just, it allows them to again, as I said in my story, sort of basically unite the Magic Kingdom under one roof. So you've got your California Adventure, which is maybe Hulu, and then you've got your Disney Sports Resort, which is ESPN, and then you've got the Magic Kingdom with everything that's on Disney, and it can live together, and you can pop in and out as you need it, and it makes a lot of sense. And, I even finally, even though I don't have ESPN Plus, I finally switched to the bundle, because I realized, hell, it makes sense. And my mom, in fact, who, shares my account, she has her own separate one. She started realizing, hey, I can watch my ABC shows on Disney Plus, and it's a lot easier. I'll just do it that way.
Yeah,
it works for her.
That is a thing. This is happening, but they've also priced the bundles pretty aggressively. Where it like Hulu is a great deal if you're a Disney Plus subscriber because it's so much little add on money to get $1 to Hulu plus Disney. And so it's kind of a no-brainer. And they're doing that for a reason, right? They really would rather people buy the bundle, either the Disney and Hulu bundle or the whatever they call it, the gold medal triple bundle of ESPN and Hulu and Disney. And so that makes it just that much easier. And I know they've done one of the things in your story. They're sampler content too. So they're putting some content from ESPN and Hulu on for Disney Plus subscribers now as a way to sort of induce you to buying maybe a higher level of bundle, which is, again, incredibly smart. And they can do all that from the same interface because literally the Hulu content and the ESPN content is in the app.
Exactly. No, and it makes a lot of sense. And it's essentially their way of doing what premium cable networks used to do in the 80s and 90s and 2000s, and still do actually, which is offer free preview weekends, right? You have your basic cable bundle, and then for a weekend or for a week, HBO and Cinemax were free, and you could sample and say, oh, I'm going to upgrade. Well, that's sort of what they're doing now, but on a daily ongoing basis, because streaming never quits. They're basically saying, well, you could keep watching more of this. And by the way, Amazon's been doing this for a while too with their channel store, right? They do it in conjunction with their partners where, you'll suddenly see, hey, you should try this first season of a show on Stars, and hey, would you like to pay $4.99 a month more and get Stars as part of your Prime Video? It's very annoying if all you really want is a nice Amazon Prime Video curated experience because they just have decided to be the everything streamer, just like the everything store. But it makes sense if you're doing upgrades, and that's what Disney's doing here. The real question to me, Jason, is this a prelude to at some point Disney ripping off the training wheels and saying, you know what, after much consideration and make programming better for all our audiences, and we're just going to have one app. I don't know if that is going to ever happen because they're about to launch, and we'll talk about this, the ESPN flagship service, which will be a really expensive standalone service that you'll also be able to get through Disney Plus. And Hulu has a pretty huge, not pretty huge, but about 4 million or so subscribers to its live TV business, which is also sort of big and requires a lot of bandwidth, and they may want to keep that separate. Because right now you can't watch Hulu with live TV on Disney Plus. So there could be some reasons not to, but essentially they've made it sort of like where you had to, because early on they've had the Disney bundle for 3 or 4 years now, at least 3 years. But for a while there, it made a lot of sense, but you could still, Hulu was inexpensive enough where if you just wanted to pay $8 a month, $9 a month for Hulu, you know, without, and we were $11.99 without ads, it made sense. Now Hulu without ads just by itself, $18.99.
Because they want you to be in the bundle.
And Disney Plus is
absolutely want you in the bundle.
Exactly. Disney Plus is going up $79.99. So what they did for a while there, and I'm going to admit here that I'm an idiot because I don't take advantage of any potential complimentary media accounts I could probably get if I wanted to, or if I would have smart for a while, I've been paying now the full price for Disney Plus and Hulu, even as they raise the price of Hulu. And I was like, why am I not just paying one price? I'm too busy. And there were probably a lot of people like me who forgot to do it. Well, they are by being this aggressive, or if they ever were to switch to one, they risk losing dummies like me who were just like not realizing, oh, I'm paying $32 a month when I could be paying $20 a month. And, you know, that's some risk, but in general, I think it makes sense. It also allows them to more efficiently bundle other things. They also now have a bundle with Max. You can get Disney Plus, Hulu, ESPN mm-hmm. Plus, and Max all in one place as well. So really, Disney has become like Amazon in its own way, a cable operator, a cable system. They're like Spectrum or Comcast, and they sort of offer a digital cable experience.
The Max content is still in the Max app and not in the Disney Plus app yet, but I would say that it did remind me of the cable experience very much when there's one app you go to and what you are able to watch there depends on your package that you're buying. You may get Hulu but not ESPN, or you may get Disney and Hulu and ESPN, or you may just get Disney. But like that sounded very familiar to me. Basically, like there's TV, which is the Disney Plus app, and then what package are you on? And it feels very cable-like, to the point where, I know that Amazon does this with its channels and Apple does it as well, this idea that you can turn on those subscriptions and then watch them right in that app and you don't necessarily even need the other app. It's a familiar feeling, I guess, is what I'm saying. The idea that they're like, oh, sure, you pay for Hulu or don't, but you still use the Disney Plus app.
Right.
Though.
What's surprising to me, though, is I personally find, even though I think Hulu and Disney Plus both have suboptimal user experiences as apps, I don't think either reaches anywhere near Netflix's level, or honestly, even Peacock's level, to be honest with you. But I actually find Hulu to have a better user interface than Disney Plus. Now, maybe you disagree, but I keep wondering, are they ever going to spend the money and really do something that feels truly imagineered? Because right now, for a company that, you know, is so big on design and user experience when you go to the theme parks, can we agree that Disney Plus is sort of like, it's functional, but it's ugly. It's hard to see the tiles. To me, nothing. There's not a lot of magic there.
Do you disagree? I agree. It's not as bad as, you know, Paramount Plus.
That's a bad app. Nor Prime Video.
And I don't know. I mean, Hulu's interface changed so many times that I honestly don't use the Hulu app anymore. I deleted it because I'm just watching all that stuff in the Disney Plus app now.
Wow.
So I just decided I would rather have it all in one place and not have to play the game of where is it, which I think is one of the reasons that having a single app for this is smart for them. But I agree. This has been a long-standing complaint of mine, which is, you're doing direct to consumer, and yet you seem to be neglecting the fact that your software interface is the interface with your consumer. And therefore, you need to really invest in that part of it. And sometimes I feel like they get caught up in what's our ad stack, or they get caught up in what movie did I green light, and they lose sight of the core place where your business touches your customer, which is a computer interface, essentially an app or a web page or whatever it is. Like, it's really important to get that right. And Netflix, as a tech first company, does a better job of that. And even Netflix could do a better job than they do. But I'm constantly surprised at what was it? There was something on Disney that I was watching recently on Disney Plus or Hulu where somebody told me that there were really great extras where they explained what, you know, how they went about making the thing. I can't remember what the show was now, but in the end, it was on their YouTube channel. And I thought, why? But
was it the Netflix show?
But the first thing I did was go to the show page. This was a Disney Plus or Hulu show. First thing I did was go to the show page, and there's nothing there, except maybe like a, you could buy some merch at the Disney website link or something like that. But that's it. And I thought, Julia and I talked about this a lot. It's like, why? You put it on YouTube. Great. Put it on YouTube. But why is it not in your app where your viewers are? Why are all of your bonus materials not in your app where your viewers are? Now, they do with Marvel. They do the Marvel Unleashed or Assembled or whatever it is, the making of things that they put on for their Marvel shows and movies. And those are there, although they're under a different show title instead of being listed as extras attached to the show that you're actually watching. I don't know about that. But like, anyway, it's stuff like this that frustrates me, that it all needs to be better interconnected because it is so important to the customer relationship.
Right. And the one thing that's encouraging to me about the takeover of CBS and Paramount by the Ellisons is that they are making rumblings that they're going to really dramatically improve the user experience of Paramount Plus, which, of course, is not hard to do. It's when you're basically, you know, below the gutter. But I will say this, you know, early on in streaming, and we all noticed this, the excuse from streamers like Disney was, well, we have to focus on just getting up and running and make sure we can handle the bandwidth. Okay, good. That was made sense. And then it was, well, yeah, but this stuff is expensive. It takes time, but we're getting there. Well, now I think it's still very expensive. Engineering costs a lot of money. It takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of time. You can do it, but you got to make the commitment. Unfortunately, where are we now in these companies? Well, they're basically crying poverty and they're trying to cut costs to be profitable. So unfortunately, I think what's probably happened is it set the necessary core evolution, which by now should be, we should be seeing, you know, versions 2 and 3 and 4.0 of these apps. We're being stalled because nobody really has the wherewithal of the money or to spend it. Maybe eventually, now that we are getting close to surviving until 25, they'll start working on it. But so it's essential, I think.
My one thing that I would point out about, because I think you're right, is the problem is culturally, and I'm going to just keep coming back to that because it's so hard to change a corporate culture. I've been there. I've been on the inside where I had to try and do that. And even if everybody says they agree, it still is hard to change it. That's why corporate cultures exist. They're fundamentally hard to change. They're meant to be. But if you then decide to change them, it's hard. And I would look at that and say, you know, oh, yes, poverty, we need to save money. Well, if you're an entertainment company, you know what you do is you cut your people who are working on your app and leave the people who are working on that TV show that you just ordered. And that this is my point is you shouldn't do that, right? Like you are, but I think that if you're an entertainment executive who came up through the ranks, you think of those computer nerds who are writing your app as being non-essential to your business. And it's not true anymore. It's absolutely not true.
Right. No. And Netflix has always been 50-50, and that's why they've kept separate offices. Yes. And it totally makes sense. Although, by the way, Netflix has also become very hardened in their ways.
Oh, sure.
And also, to me, they're not being as aggressive as they can in terms of evolving their interface and in new ideas. But also the thing, it's so sad because, you know, we're finally starting, I'm working on this story now, but, you know, we're finally seeing these streamers realize that, oh, people like network style shows. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of where you put them. So they're making shows that feel more networky. Well, these companies have also forgotten everything they knew about linear television and what people like. When you went to the Disney Channel, it was an entire experience. There was branding. There was an environment. There were bumpers. There were everything about it was creating that Disney magic. Or CBS, they spent all this money to sort of make it feel like, especially in cable, like an experience on brand. Well, you don't feel that when you go to Disney Plus or Paramount Plus. You don't feel that sense of like branding or having defined channel spaces. Like there should be, you know, they're all experimenting with channels, but they're not really doing it the right way. You know, Netflix is the one that really is most behind on this. Netflix should have introduced 5 or 6 different channel experiences so you can flip through 7 or 6, 8 different homepages, not just movies, TV shows, but there should be a page that's just about Netflix geek shows and where it just welcomes you in there with content
name.
And always on stream with a brand
name, a logo,
you know?
and a color,
yes,
and all of those things so that you could sit there and say, oh, this is my Netflix actually, is this.
And right. And what you do is you also unlock value for consumers because they realize, you know, I think I've probably said this at some point on this show. If not, I've said it a million other places. But when I did my cover story on Netflix like 5, 6 years ago, and the big takeaway at first was, oh, Netflix isn't trying to be HBO. They're trying to be the cable bundle. Which is true, right? They've got all that. But they haven't. They should let consumers know that because if you carve out that spaces, those spaces for them, they will know, like, oh, I'm getting 50 Netflix channels, because they are. And I just think it would be a way. And to some degree, they know that. They know there's a lot of content, but that's also where the engineers sort of have too much power. They're thinking in their sort of way, as opposed to the people who come from network world, where it's about branding and images and marketing and creating brand identities. That's what has been lost. And it shouldn't just be focused on the big brand, which is important, but also those sub-brands underneath it. Anyway, we'll see what happens.
This episode is brought to you by Tract, your streaming sidekick. It's like having a super smart friend who knows everything about what you're watching. It's ideal for those times when you're thinking, what should I watch next? There is so much to love about Tract. They've got this great new feature, Streaming Scrabble. That's right. It automatically tracks everything you're watching on platforms like Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, and more. You don't have to log anything manually. Just relax and enjoy your shows. They have a global streaming guide, which will tell you exactly where to find your favorite shows and movies, no matter where you are in the world. And you can keep your must-watch list organized and at your fingertips on your watch list. No more scrolling endlessly through streaming services. And we're getting to the end of the year. Their year in review is really cool. What better time to dive into your viewing stats and discover fun facts about your watching habits? It's like a personal Netflix Wrapped or Spotify Wrapped, you know, just for you. Just for you. I think Tract is really great. My wife and I struggle with what to watch next. What have we caught up on? What are we missing episodes for? And Tract can solve that problem so easily, so conveniently. The best part, it's available pretty much everywhere on the web, on Android, on iOS, even on Apple TV. It's your pocket-sized TV guru, always ready to make your streaming life easier and more fun. So go to tract.tv/downstream. That's tract.tv/downstream for a 50% discount on Tract VIP. That's tract.tv/downstream for 50% for the first year. Thank you to Tract for supporting Downstream. I also wanted to go back for a second to what you said about tester content, because I want to hit this point because I think it's so brilliant, which is Shogun is available on Disney Plus to Disney Plus subscribers who don't get Hulu. They made it available. There's a bunch of live sporting events that are going to be ESPN Plus live sporting events that you'll just be able to watch even if you don't subscribe to ESPN Plus. And it's all part of this. We want you to get into the bundle and see what its value is. So you mentioned the free preview weekend, and it is kind of like that. But I really admire the aggressiveness of this, saying, yeah, Shogun that everybody's talking about, you can just watch it. Now, there is going to be a second season, and I'm sure you'll need to pay for Hulu to see the second season. But I like that. I like that they're saying, here's a bunch of content that you just get because it's in your app. And if you want more of it, pay us a little bit more and you get more. I think that that's a powerful strategy. Again, it's more of a content strategy than a technology strategy. Although I would say when we complain about Disney not progressing their app, they do keep having to stick other content from other places into their app. Like, they did have to add the Hulu tile and the ESPN tile, and the ESPN stuff has got a live streaming aspect that Disney and Hulu didn't have. So I'm going to give them a little bit of slack. They are there are other corporate endeavors that are kind of forcing their hand maybe a little bit in terms of development. But I love how aggressive they are from the content strategy and saying, yeah, we're going to give you a bunch of free stuff, free to you because you aren't paying for Hulu yet.
Well, the other key thing that's what happened here, too, is they've cut back, as you hinted at just now, it's like they've cut back on the number of Disney Plus originals. They never had enough to begin with. They were too limited. They were relying on the library. And look, the library keeps a lot of people coming back. It is a babysitter. And I wrote this when I did my launch story on Disney Plus. It's like it's going to always have a certain number of people just on that dang library alone. But you can only charge people so much for that library. So in order to justify the continued price hikes and also deal with the fact that they're offering them less, instead of getting three or four Marvel shows a year, you're getting two, maybe three, and less Star Wars shows. Well, hey, we're giving some Hulu, we're giving some Shogun, we're giving some ESPN. It's a constant sort of way of saying, don't look over here. It's very Disney.
It's like, value.
It's very Wizard of Oz. Don't look over at like what we're taking away from you. Look at what we're giving you. Meanwhile, they're putting other stuff away. You know. And by the way, Max has done the similar thing too. I mean, that's when Zaslav took away a cutback on originals from Max originals and got to that whole unit of shows that were just going to be for Max. But he put on a lot of crap from Discovery Channel networks, and so that gave people free reality. He's done that with Bleacher Report, which at some point was supposed to be an add-on. I think it's still free because it never really took off. Same thing with CNN Beta. At some point, David Zaslav being who he is and what the companies are, hopefully you'll finally get the chance to get, you know, full CNN for $5 a month or, you know, yeah. So, and it's, and that makes some sense. At some point, you know, you should have the option to pay more to get more. But right now, this is also about disguising the fact that you're paying the same and getting less without these little added-ons.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and everybody's paying more in a sense, right? Because everybody's had their rates raised. So even if you're just paying for Disney Plus, you're paying a lot more for it. So yeah, you may not even be paying for Hulu, although you probably should, but we're still going to give you that content. And you're right. That is a little bit of a trade-off as well to keep you in the app. And that's the other thing. And this is another place where they really remind me of Netflix, which is Netflix. Part of Netflix's strategy, it's why they haven't made a deal with Apple to be an Apple's TV app, is never leave Netflix, right? Like there's no competition, like no competition. So Netflix, when you're in the app, all they want to do is keep you in the app. They don't want you to go to YouTube. They don't want you to go to a different streaming service. And they've got such an enormous catalog that they can do that better than maybe anybody else because they have so much that they've licensed. There's so much in the Netflix ecosystem that they will always algorithmically push another thing on you. Like, you could try this or you could try that. There's 80 million stand-up specials. There's all these comedies. There's all the sci-fi. We've got everything for everybody. Well, it's not the same, but that Disney Plus app, when it adds ESPN and it adds Hulu, I start to think, oh, yeah, this is what they're doing. It is a Netflix-like strategy in the sense of saying, look, you pay us for the bundle, you're in this app, there's so much in here you never need to leave, because it's no longer just the kids stuff and the Star Wars stuff and the Marvel stuff. It's also now all the Hulu stuff and also all these college basketball games and the Peyton Manning show and eventually ESPN flagship presumably would be in here. Maybe it's in a separate app to start, but yeah, right. So
yeah, it does, but it also, it's why people who complained about Max becoming Max as opposed to just HBO Max. Why can't you just give us HBO? It's like, well, sure, but do you realize how little HBO makes each year? Yeah. Like, even in the heydays of cable, they were only making so much. And yeah, and no one ever really paid $15 a month for HBO. But if you did, on streaming, you have to. Max always needed to expand. Always made sense. It couldn't just be HBO. You know, I hate, by the way, and I'm probably a minority because I'm one of the very small percentage of people like you who have Apple TV. And I love the Apple TV user interface because it allows me to keep track of all of my shows.
Yes.
Except, of course, the Netflix shows. So you know who watches a whole lot less Netflix? Me, because
you
why?
And me, these guys.
And it's in part because they sort of, Netflix in their stubbornness, refuses to believe that there are people like me who want a lot of older shows and library stuff and more generic stuff and stuff that's weekly. And so I'm watching those shows and I'm forgetting about Netflix stuff or I'm forgetting to come back to Netflix stuff. And it's ridiculous. It's one thing if you don't want to allow yourself to be an add-on in the Amazon channel store. Totally get that. And I don't think Disney does that. Max at one point took itself out. Now it's back in. I forget. I don't think you can can you get Disney's as part of the Apple channels or Amazon channels? I'm not sure anymore.
I don't know if you can.
But that makes sense. But Disney allow, if you watch something on Disney or Hulu, it shows up, and it's such a petty, petty little thing that they do. And it makes no sense because, by the way, Netflix does allow itself to be in the continue watching on Roku.
On Roku. I know. It's maddening.
And it's just because they don't want to spend and look, there are some technical challenges. The Apple ecosystem has been explained to me requires like the coding and all that. But trust me, if Paramount Plus can figure it out, it's a rounding error for Netflix. Yeah. You're just being petty and it's dumb. And it's at this point with Netflix also fighting, especially in the U.S., to keep users and not being able to expand much more. It makes no sense for them to keep being that petty. And hopefully they'll change that.
I hope so, because Apple TV, although expensive, is also the nicest. I every time I try the Amazon or Roku devices, like, they work, but like, they're not very good. And the Apple one is good. It's overpowered for what it is, but boy, that means that it works really well. And so, yeah, I wish Netflix would make that deal.
Apple does need to have an option for better remotes. I'm fine with the remote now, and I've used it to work it. They revamped it a few years ago, yes, and it's a lot better. But I do worry. I keep wanting to upgrade my mom, my 78-year-old mom, to it, mm-hmm, and I'm worried, I don't know. It's sort of small. It's not as tactile.
Yeah.
There should be an alternative that allows someone like to, I mean, there are some solutions out there, but they're not great. But there should be a better remote control option for older people again.
All right, let's talk about David Zaslav. We mentioned him earlier. He made a deal. Now, okay, when the NBA negotiations were going on and NBC swooped in with a big bid for NBA rights, one of the conspiracy theories was, aha, they're playing three-dimensional chess here, which, by the way, I didn't expect to go here, but I'm going to go here. I see people calling it Vulcan chess. It's not Vulcan chess. It's three-dimensional chess. Mr. Spock played it, but you know who was really good at three-dimensional chess? Captain Kirk was, because he was a captain, and it was all about his thing. It's not Vulcan chess. It's a Vulcan nerve pinch, but not the Vulcan chess. It's 3D chess. Anyway, what I'm saying is, okay, Comcast is playing 3D chess. They're like, aha. But you see, we're going to spend billions of dollars over here for the NBA, but we're going to save billions of dollars because we're not going to give Warner Brothers Discovery as much money for TNT from our cable channels because we will have stolen the NBA from them, and that's how we're going to get them. And, well, they just signed a 2-year carriage deal with Comcast, Warner Brothers Discovery did, that essentially, according to reports, keeps the carriage fee flat, which in an inflation-ish economy is down maybe in total value, but is relatively flat. It didn't get dropped by billions of dollars. Part of the deal, again, not particularly new from what things we've seen elsewhere. Max can be bundled by Comcast so that, you know, you'll have an ad-based Max plan that can be put into a Comcast bundle. They made some other deals. Comcast owns Sky in the UK. Sky is going to also have an ad-supported Max bundle. They get access to the Harry Potter TV show, which they had sort of withdrawn from them because there used to be a content partnership with Sky in the UK, but they were going to take it away, and now it will be a part of this deal. So I don't know what you think about where they ended up. I think obviously they were in a place where they needed to make a deal, and it was going to be harder than it was when they had the NBA, which was, I would argue, a more must-have sport than the collection of sports that David Zaslav has sort of swept together into Turner Sports as they were in the process of losing the NBA. But it is also not the result of a 3D chess sort of checkmate where Comcast is reaping the billions of dollars that they spent on the NBA.
So I would say David Zaslav isn't as dumb and people at Comcast aren't as smart as some of my friends in other publications would have you believe for the sake of drama, for subject lines and headlines. Look, David Zaslav wanted the NBA. I'm convinced of it. And he thought he was going to find a way to do it. And he got out hustled and he lost it. And losing it is a blow to Warner Brothers Discovery, just period. Long term, it was a big sport. It brought in people. It made some sense. However, at what price is the question? At some point, given how much Comcast was clearly willing to pay, it wasn't worth it. So I don't think it was ever a disaster. I think if he had played his cards right and been a better negotiator, yeah, and had the right veteran people who he hadn't laid off, he could have found a way to sort of gotten a little piece of that puzzle, still save some money. Comcast, there was probably a path forward. I believe that, yes. But at the end of the day, look, the cable bundle, Comcast still needs his networks. You say inflationary economy. Well, also, cable ratings are collapsing. So true. I'm really curious if anyone is getting huge increases. And if they are, I wonder why. Because do these cable companies really think that audiences are going to pay these huge increases? They're already starting. They're cutting. But on the other hand, these MSOs are sort of so short-term thinking and suicidal, it seems. And, you know, they're finally starting to realize it's about the apps. And finally, there are some deals there. That makes some sense. But So anyway, I don't think anyone's playing chess here. I think everyone's, they're being very gut level. You know, Comcast was decided a year or two ago, we are going to get NBA period. It's the key to Peacock. We're going to do it. And they did it. And that didn't mean that they were thinking, oh, but we can do that. They were hoping, obviously they're hoping, well, maybe we can save a little money in the long term, but that's not how these people operate. I've never seen them to be that intelligent or that sophisticated. They've got a single-minded goal. The sports people laid out within the company, we got to get NBA. And then other reporters maybe try to do some backward justification, or people at some of these companies then try to spin reporters, whatever. I've been spun. I'm not saying I'm above being spun. I have been over my career. I think longer term, you know, for right now, Comcast or Discovery, Warner Brothers Discovery will be fine without the NBA. Long term, who knows what the value is, you know? And who knows also in what form the company will be in 2 years, and whether or not, you know, does David Zaslav think that he'll be running Comcast? Will Comcast own Warner Brothers Discovery? Will it be neither of the above? I don't know. But
Well, I mean, obviously this will play out, but I think I would also, this is a recurring, I feel like we talked about this when Julia was here back in the day too, that like, it's easy to make fun of Zaslav. There are lots of reasons why, but also he's not a dummy. He's got his reasons. He's got his motivations. We don't always understand them, and he's certainly able to make mistakes, and he does things that anger people, but he's not a dummy either. I think you made the point perfectly that he's not as dumb as you think he is, and they're not as smart as you think they are. Everybody is more just people, and they've got their focuses. I would say, I think Zaslav, here's my praise for him, I think he's done a pretty good job making something out of the loss of the NBA. So they spent money on some other sports rights. So they've got some sports rights. Some of those they signed. Some of those they took games from packages where, like there's a college football package, I believe, that they got some games from, that's essentially one of their competitors buys the big package and then sublicenses pieces of the package back to other channels because they don't have the inventory for it. And they did some of that. And he's managed to assemble an okay collection of sports. It's not the NBA, but it's not nothing. And I would say with that collection of sports and CNN, it would be very hard for a cable provider to say, we're going to cut you out and we're not going to use their channels. Like,
well, and they also want access to HBO. But it's a different business. I mean, yeah, so that's always there. And by the way,
they resell,
they're also,
yeah.
And by the way, this whole thing is like, you know, everyone gets a spin. Like, well, we don't know because we haven't seen all the financials and no one ever really sees all of it. It's a spin that everyone agrees to. You know, everyone agrees to make everyone look okay. Like, the fact is, here's what Zaslav is good at and what he's better, let's say, the previous administration. I've already forgotten his name, who ran Paramount Global, Bob Bakish. You know, those people who are just like, whatever they are. Like, Zaslav is a cable guy, a cable industry guy. Mm-hmm. He's been dealing with MSOs forever. He knows how. He has good relationships with some of them. And you can do a deal that lets everyone claim a victory, including Comcast. Yeah. So, you know, by the way, they're now getting, in the same way that Disney's done it, they get the chance to offer HBO a premium service in certain tiers. And if that can lure people to stay, well, then that's not a bad thing.
That's good.
And so that has value.
Yeah.
And you may not be paying more for that, but what you're paying for, it's all the same bundle of money, essentially. So it just, if they're in a perfect world where Warner Brothers Discovery still had the NBA for TNT and more games in a bigger package like the one with Comcast that would be on Max and all that, I'll guarantee you he would not have easily as bundled Max with Comcast would not be able to bundle it without paying more for it.
Right.
So they're getting more, even if they're not paying more for, they're paying less, but they're, you know, it all washes out is what I'm saying.
Right. This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Factor. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes when these days get shorter, it's midwinter, feels like that to-do list gets longer. Good news is it's because the day is shorter. That's why. It's because the day is shorter. But you can power through your busy days with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. From breakfast to dinner and anything in between, Factor has easy, nutritious options to keep you fueled and feeling your best. Whether you like routine or you enjoy mixing things up, choose from 35 different delicious meals every week and over 60 additional convenience options you can add to your box, like keto cookies, pressed juices, and smoothies. So don't let shorter days slow you down. Stay energized with America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service. Number one. I'm so proud of you, Factor. Look, they send me meals in a box a couple of times.
And we tried them out. My wife and I tried them out. And I work from home. She is a librarian. She goes to work in the library. What I found is that most of my podcast stuff, she's like, well, that's nice. You got a thing from a podcast. Factor meals? Nope. She just takes them to work with her until there are none left because they passed her approval. And I'm telling you, most of this podcast stuff, she's like, whatever, do whatever. But Factor meals, when she's got to have a meal at work for lunch every single day, huge hit. They taste so good. They feel high quality ingredients. You can microwave them in a couple of minutes. They don't feel like a compromise. Like you're like, oh, well, it's not that good, but at least it's 2 minutes. It's not like that. I don't know what they do. I think it's the high quality ingredients really is the bottom line because they taste good and they taste like they're made out of good stuff. And that is amazing. And that's Factor. 6 different menu preferences are available. You can manage calories, manage protein intake, avoid meat, eat a well-balanced diet. They're all chef-prepared, dietitian-approved. You know that they are going to support your goals. It's cheaper than takeout or dining out. Find guilt-free comfort foods like homestyle chicken and gravy or loaded mashed potato pork chops. Feel-good vegan options like sweet potato and chickpea curry and globally inspired flavors like Peruvian shrimp and red pepper collie grits. Weekly menus offer ways to treat yourself to a restaurant-like meal experience with Gourmet Plus dishes that feature premium proteins and seasonal sides like broccolini, leeks, and asparagus. Look, stay on your A game. Use quality ingredients. They're in Factor stuff. You can trust in it. Fresh, never frozen. Use your time more efficiently in these deep, dark months. Let Factor take shopping, prepping, cooking, and cleaning off your daily list of things to do. Go to factormeals.com/downstream50 and use the code downstream50 to get 50% off your first month and 20% off your next month. That's code downstream50 at factormeals.com/downstream50 to get 50% off your first month and 20% off your next month. What? While your subscription is active. Thank you to Factor for supporting Downstream. Speaking of spin,
what? That's a segue.
Let's talk about
now. That's what I call a segue. Spinco. Volume 82.
Spinco, yes. Which is not the actual name, but it's what they're calling it for now. Comcast. Also, speaking of Comcast, last episode, I talked about this a little bit with Natalie, but I thought I would ask you about it too. This is the story where they have they're going to take their cable channels, except for Bravo, and put them in a separate company that will, you know, have the current revenues and will also be watching as the cable bundle kind of slides away, those revenues going down lower and lower and lower. So rather than hold on to them as part of Comcast and NBC Universal, they're going to take all those channels, including the CNBC and MSNBC, and putting them out there in SpinCo. And I was curious what you thought about this move.
I guess there makes some sense of it. I think it's basically their way of sort of allowing the broadcast company, the non-SpinCo, to be purely focused on driving growth for Peacock and streaming and maximizing that. And so if it doesn't contribute to the success of Peacock, then you want it in another company. Mm. Pure and simple. News, for whatever reason, just isn't that. There's no, you know, it just isn't. In terms of what it leaves for the cable bundle, yes, it means OldCo, let's call it that, is going to be less advantageous in theory in cable negotiations. But, you know, there's the same sort of zombie bundle that it's had for a while, you know, or not the same bundle. They'll probably get less revenue from cable, but they're still going to have NBC, which is a big part of what cable operators want. And they've got to give them something for it. In the past, they gave them channels. Now they'll give them whatever it is. Peacock will more likely be the one thing that, and I'll be curious to see if this happens, when Peacock launched, the original plan was to make sure that everyone who has a cable subscription got basic Peacock with ads for free. Basically, the model that we're now seeing with Disney and Max mm-hmm. and all these other companies, that's what Peacock wanted.
Yeah, that's
cable companies said, the cable company said, screw you, and it never got that. And so after a couple years, all of a sudden, you even for people like me at Cox Cable, who originally did get Peacock included for free, you had to pay for it. Well, I think they want to go back to, hey, if you get a cable subscription, you get Peacock.
Yeah.
They want the same thing. So if they can get 20 million more people or whatever on Peacock Basic, that's a big win. And that's what I think that'll be driving that. And in terms of the news value of it all, I think we'll see what happens with MSNBC and CNBC streaming. Maybe there's a world where they decide to do an add-on, where they do a deal with their sister company where, hey, do you want to add MSNBC and CNBC? Pay $3 more for Peacock Premium Plus, and they license it. Or maybe not. Maybe they do their own app at SpinCo, that just is a news-focused app on MSNBC and that. Or maybe there's a merger, and as I've speculated in some of my early coverage, MSNBC and CNN somehow end up on the same corporate roof, and then we're all screwed. But stranger things have happened. And then maybe there's a super news app. So we'll see what happens. Yep. But I think in general, it's okay, why not? Go ahead. And it'll be curious to see what SpinCo does in terms of mergers, acquisitions, whether it allows itself to get bought or whether it acquires some cheap cable assets that Paramount Global or Paramount Dance or Skymount decides to spin off. Whatever happens, it could be interesting.
That is definitely an area of speculation that people have, which is maybe SpinCo is going to become the acquirer of cable channels, which is an interesting idea, right? To sort of like bring them all in here, because it is actually a profitable business. It's just declining. And so it's a different, it is managed differently. And if you're the management of Comcast and NBC Universal, you want to be in the growth business. You want to show growth, and that's going to be in streaming. There's a lot of great businesses that are very profitable that are disemboweled by private equity and they pull all the value out of it. And that's probably what's going to happen to SpinCo. But it'll make money for people on the way down, and
it might. But I mean, the other question is, everyone's saying they're going to be the ones buying, and I'm not so
sure.
Could be bought or sold off, because honestly, the cable assets. Let's say, why would you want to buy all of Paramount's cable brands? What are you buying that's left? Very little there. Like Paramount Network soon isn't going to have Yellowstone, so Paramount Network means nothing. MTV is nothing. VH1, Comedy Central has been completely Central, yeah. VH1. It's just that's bad management at Paramount's part. They've not kept that brand vital the way Disney kept FX's brand vital by making it a streaming brand. You'll have a bunch of zombie networks, but what are you going to put on them? And just MSNBC, that's not going to be enough. CNBC, that's not going to be enough. Whereas on the other hand, I could see Paramount deciding, oh, well, maybe we could use a news channel. And, I don't know.
It just becomes, CNBCBS.
Yeah, or something, or
MSNBC, CNN?
Who knows? I mean, maybe Disney buys it. I don't know. But, the thing is, I think if you're in the cable business, you either want to have a really strong brand, a premium brand, which Warner Brothers Discovery has with HBO, and to a lesser degree TNT and TBS, which still have value as sort of movie networks and old reruns, and they do okay. They were never big on originals anyway. They veered off into originals for a while, but it was never like USA Network. TNT originals never took off.
Right.
They had The Closer and a few other shows for sure, but they were never as strong. You've got that. I don't know. I just don't know you have to either have that strong premium brand or you have to have a network. So that's what Paramount has. They've got CBS. That brings value to cable companies. NBC brings value for Oldco with Peacock. What will this new company have? I don't know. I don't know what it has that makes it valuable, but maybe they'll be able to invest and make cable great again. Maybe some of those cable brands, like there's nothing that says that MTV or Comedy Central couldn't be good again. If you have a company that's just focused on cable again and revenue, it could work. There's enough people in the cable bundle still that maybe it could work. I don't know.
It's an interesting thing to watch. Not exciting from a like growth and change, but it's definitely going to be like a lot of well-known brands are going to really transform over the next few years as these things get spun off or consolidated or whatever happens. And yes, we got some letters about this from listeners saying that the real surprise, as I think it was for a lot of people, that they weren't going to hold on to MSNBC and CNBC, given that there's NBC News. What does that mean? Although, I got to be honest here, right? CNBC is a business channel. It shares very little DNA with NBC. It is a business channel.
And MSNBC is basically a politics channel with talking heads. And then there's NBC News Now, which is their streaming NBC all the time that's run by NBC News, which will remain part of NBC Universal. So we think of MSNBC and CNBC maybe being more tied to NBC News than is actually relevant.
Well, and by the way, there's nothing to prevent NBC News Now from going on a linear channel, on cable. Yeah, there's nothing, by the way, they've devoted more and more resources, so you bulk it up and you sell to cable. Like a lot of, like, you know, YouTube TV and Hulu, they will have NBC News Now. Right. There are a lot of, DirecTV is now doing fast channels, people getting digitally. You could easily make NBC News Now is their news channel.
And unencumbered, which is, this has been the story all along with CNN, but when they did CNN Plus, and it's true of MSNBC and CNBC, a lot of these channels are encumbered with rules about what they can stream because they're cable channels. NBC News Now is not encumbered. It is a streaming play. It is pure. They can do whatever they want with it. And that matters. Like, it does. It matters. So you essentially, you've got this product, which is for cable, and you've got this product, right, which is for, well, you know, the internet.
Right. Although if you did put NBC News on cable, the question would be, will cable companies require you to sort of like give them any sort of exclusivity? And because otherwise, what am I paying for?
Yeah.
So they may not, but it could just be, but they can just say, this is an incentive. Hey, we're giving you this. So we're giving this for basically free.
Or it's on streaming and it's available on your box, but it's streaming and not linear, even though when everything is coming over the cable from the cable company, I'm not sure streaming and linear make sense as terms anymore. Like, which protocol is this streaming by? Like, it doesn't matter at that point if it's a TV show.
No, it doesn't. It's just a matter of who has exclusive and how you pay for it.
Exactly.
But, you know, the new company, new SpinCo, when it does renegotiates deal for MSNBC and CNBC for cable carriage, hopefully they'll be able to figure out a way so that, you know, all of their content's like, we're giving this to you, but all the stuff also will stream on our app
stream.
And by the way, people who get cable, they can get access to the app. So if people would rather watch it, you know, in the same way that you get, you know, Hulu or Max or whatever as part of your bundle, you'll get the MSNBC.
You'll get the SpinCo app. Can't wait for the SpinCo app.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I'm sure that'll be a good one.
Spin sugar.
This is a movie note, but I wanted to talk about it because I think it's kind of interesting. So first off, during the pandemic and after the first like year or two of the pandemic, we talked about how there was this whole question of like, were theaters going to come back or not? Was theatrical dead? Not different, but not dead is the answer. But I thought this was just a fascinating story that wraps all that up in an interesting nutshell, which is Moana 2 came out in theaters and it was an enormous hit. And that's interesting, one, because it is an enormous theatrical hit for Disney, which went through a period where everybody's like, oh no, you've trained people that they can just wait and not go to the theater and it'll show up on Disney Plus and they'll watch it there. And so what we've seen is that with this and Inside Out 2, Disney has had some theatrical success this year that is not being apparently undercut by the success of Disney Plus. So that is an interesting bullet point. And the other interesting bullet point is Moana 2 was being developed as a direct-to-Disney Plus series, and they changed direction and said, how about we make it a theatrical release instead? And they are rolling in hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars as a result of it. And I think that's fascinating because we went through that period where everything was like, no, it's not going to be a movie. It's going to be an original Disney Plus series of Marvel or Star Wars or animation. And now we are firmly in the post whatever that period was era. And I just think it's fascinating that this was a series. They pulled it off. They rejiggered it. They made it a feature. And it was a hit. Like, and it wasn't just like it's okay. It was legitimately a hit where people didn't say, we'll wait for Disney Plus.
Well, and probably one of the reasons why they made that decision, in addition to needing theatrical content after the strikes and everything, and the pipeline perhaps being a little slow, is they probably also had a lot of data from Disney Plus showing how popular Moana was. I mean, before the movie, the new second movie came out, Moana 1 started rocketing up the charts because they were able to push it. They've got this data. They see that it's there. And the same thing that led them to think, well, maybe we can do a series because it's doing well. And said, you know what? Let's do it this way. And I think that shows flexibility and what you want from companies. And, you know, look, there were a lot of statements made during the pandemic that, you know, things evolve. It was no one knew exactly what was going to go on with movies and society. And the fact is, the movie business remains different. You know, the theatrical experience is still off limits to a lot of people who are concerned about health, financial considerations, the fact that the movie going experience has been degraded post pandemic and even before then, people complaining about, you know, how audiences acted after the pandemic in theaters. They were already bad. Now they're even worse. So it does change what sorts of movies you can make. But for something like this, Disney was built for, Disney's movie business was already going this way. I mean, Bob Iger built that. He built a tentpole franchise business years ago. And to a lot of people's anger, right, that he, you know, when they took over Fox in 20th, it was like, oh, you're not going to do more adult films. We're only doing tentpoles. And you don't have, you know, sort of making, you know, City Slickers, which was a famous Disney movie. You know, you don't steal stuff like that. That's going to be more likely on Disney Plus still, if it even is made at all. But those sorts of tentpole movies are the ones Disney makes better than anyone, and it's no mistake why they dominate at the box office. Even when Marvel has its ups and downs, they know how to do it. And I think it shows flexibility. It shows listening to your creative, saying like, do we have enough here? You know, critics didn't even love Moana 2, right? There were a lot of critics that I was mad.
No.
But, you know, whatever.
Doesn't matter.
There were a lot of, yeah, it made sense. And by the way, it will still be a huge, huge success for Disney Plus.
100%.
Disney Plus,
yeah.
In fact, will even get more value out of this because now kids will want to relive this experience more and more than they ever would have with the show. And they've created it. So it is sort of genius. That doesn't mean, I don't think that should mean that there shouldn't be spinoffs from successful movie franchises that are exclusive to Disney Plus, but it's a matter for everyone of just listening to the right cues from the audience is what's going to work and taking some chances. Also, early on, the reason this happened was because Disney Plus, the reason they did all this is they needed people to subscribe.
Yeah.
Well, now I think this is a sign that Disney feels, you know what? We've got these people. We've got them. We just talked before about the Hulu of it all and the ESPN and the bundle. We don't have to worry as much about churn. We don't have to, like, we don't need to do this Moana series to make sure we either get more signups because we've got most of the people we're ever going to get, or because we're going to lose it because we don't have enough content. We'll give them Shogun. So the person who might have canceled because of, you know, they're different audiences, but most people have, like, subscribers have people in the family.
Most parents
who want,
are adults.
And they want different kinds of things. So they're fine. Yeah. If they now they'll have to pay. And of course, you now have to pay to see this Moana thing, which before you would have gotten it. And so, you know, the house always wins and the mouse always wins.
The mouse always wins. It's true.
Yeah. It never bet against the mouse.
It's true. But I think it's interesting, too, that a lot of people were willing to bury theatrical. And while it is not the same, and it will, I mean, it's never going to be the same. It's been interesting that in 2024, Disney has had multiple very successful theatrical products. And I think part of that is they have taken the time to sort of redefine how that window of when it's going to come to Disney Plus. So like Deadpool and Wolverine just came to Disney Plus this month, I believe, or maybe late last month. And again, not a 30-day window, right? A much longer window for a summer movie to come to Disney Plus. And I'm sure it will do really well on Disney Plus, but they've managed to, you know, prop open that window a little bit more and tell people like, yeah, you want to see this in the theater. That's where you get to see this. And
as opposed to David Zaslav, who has, you know, what could be the last movie ever from Clint Eastwood and Endure number 2 gets a lot of buzz, and rather than adjusting your strategy and saying, you know what, we don't need to just, like, you know, Endure number 2 will go on and barely make a ripple on Max. But if they had put it out there and it premiered at the end of December as a Christmas treat, or even in January, right around, you know, it could have done something. Or on the other hand, maybe it's a bad movie, because I noticed it didn't get a lot of Golden Globe nominations. Did it get any, by the way?
I don't know.
So some of that could just be, you know, Clint Eastwood diehards, people who just want to bash Warner Brothers. It could be that this was simply a movie that wasn't ever going to. And by the way, it probably wouldn't have done well in theaters.
Probably.
So the question is, how do you figure that out? How do you make an event of it? There's probably a way, and I still hope Netflix is getting it that way. I think Red One, by the way, Amazon, sort of, you know, it's got horrible reviews, and it certainly hasn't done a lot of box office. But you know what? I think they've made that a much more valuable property for Amazon Prime Video. It's something that people have seen in theaters. It still made like $75-100 million, which is not successful based upon how much it cost, but at least they got back part of that money for what would have been a Prime Video movie. So
exactly.
There's some logic in it. Of course, maybe just not make movies that cost $250 million.
Well, I think that is a good lesson. Idea. Although, again, they will be able to get some of it back in that they've done all the movie marketing and promotion, and now it'll be on Prime Video in the holiday season, right? Like that's not bad.
I think this week.
Not bad. Might actually work out for them. Before we go, the new feature of Downstream, which is TV picks, things that we are enjoying that we think that you might want to watch. Since we talked about the business of streaming, how about the content of streaming? Joe, do you have some picks for me?
Sure, too. The first is a show you probably, if you're on social media, you probably, it's funny, it's from the same team that did Ted Lasso, minus the guy from SNL. Mm-hmm. And just like Ted Lasso, which is sort of was a word of mouth hit, there's the same sort of thing with Shrinking, where people now in season two especially are discovering, I really like this show, and it's good, and you should be watching this, and it's very much a dude's rock show, but it's not a dude show. It's for anyone who's ever been in therapy or not in therapy. It's basically Jason Segel, Harrison Ford, a whole bunch of other great people, and it's sort of think about if you ever were a fan of Cougar Town, another show from the same creator, Bill Lawrence, and who did Scrubs. Think of it as but the Cougar Town grew up, was not in Florida, maybe a little more educated, a little less, not quite as weird, a little more talky about themselves and not constrained by network TV standards and practices. And it's that. It's very much of a hang show. And it's, you want to hang out with this crew every week. So you get sort of that sort of, in many ways, it's very sitcom-y. It could easily have just been a multi-camera because they go for the jokes every time, but they also go for the heart and the emotions of single camera in the way that Bill Lawrence has always done. So that is wrapping up its second season this week. You can now binge, by the time you listen to this, you can binge every episode this week of season one and season two. I highly recommend that.
Yes.
And then the other thing is, this is Hallmark Christmas movie season. You either love them or you hate them. And if you hate them, you haven't really watched them and you have no soul. No. They're not good movies on many levels, but they are a vibe, as the kids like to say. They are, especially with the world being as tense and down as it is. The Hallmark movies I discovered a couple years ago because they're now on Peacock next day for a few days. And you can watch them without commercials if you've got that plan. They just create sort of cozy, interesting, fun holiday viewing. They can sometimes get repetitive. Overall, this has not been the best of year for Hallmark Christmas movies. A couple years ago, they were actually really good, which was the first year I watched them. But there is one that premiered this weekend called Sugar Plummed. It may be too late for you to catch it on Peacock. It's going to disappear from Peacock on Tuesday. So if this is Wednesday or beyond, but if it's past December 11th, you're out of luck with Peacock, but you can watch it a million times on Hallmark, the linear channel. And it's basically a send-up of Hallmark movies, imagining if a character from a Hallmark-like movie was somehow transported into real life, how she would interact with a fan of that franchise. It probably sounds ridiculous, and you're probably wondering, why am I listening to this idiot? But it's actually very well done, very funny, very warm. And Jason, do you ever watch Hallmark movies, or are you very much a non-Hallmark person?
They're still searching for my soul.
Yes, this is the guy who did a podcast with Tim Goodman forever. So I imagine Tim Goodman also not a Hallmark.
Now
person.
My good friend from college, Julie Sherman Wolf, writes a couple of Hallmark movies a year. So I have lots of friends who love them. I've never even watched one. I didn't, not even in ironic fashion. It's just been a thing that has completely passed me by.
It has. I said, by the way, this is the streaming revolution. I never watched one myself either until they came on Peacock. I said, well, it was a pandemic, 2021, still was a grim winter. Why don't I just sort of like check this out? Because, hey, no commercials, no endless chyrons from... And you know what? Some of them are actually really cozy and good. And they're the exact opposite of Red One, where you have more money than God. They've got no money. So they spend on everyone involved in it gives it their all for their little show. They're all putting on a little show for the viewer. And some of them are really not good, but some of them actually punch so much above their weight class that it's something to behold. Definitely. It's when your mind needs a break from peak TV. That's how I describe them.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm going
You're never
going to
watch, are you? You're never going to watch.
I have thought about it. I have thought about like trying it out, like picking a good, and actually Julie has one coming out this year that maybe I'll watch. She wrote the Kansas City Chiefs
That was an amazing movie? That was one of the best ones they've done. All yes, right. That was very good this year. Watch that movie. There's going to be an extended cut version of that coming on to Peacock in a couple weeks, so you can watch that. That'll have the full Julie Sherman Wolf experience.
That's nice.
And yeah, so check that one out. That's a good way to start.
All right, yeah. Somebody I know, and she's a diehard 49er fan, and she's like, I'm really sorry, but this was the job, so it's a Kansas City Chiefs movie.
Football fans, I think some football fans who aren't absolutely hated it. So for now, for someone with actually really good TV, here's Jason.
This was the number one pick on Alan Sepinwall's best TV of the year list, and I started watching it, and it's great. It's Somebody Somewhere on HBO, which is a show, I think Alan described it as a show in which very little actually happens, but like, it's about people living in a town in Kansas, having their lives. I am struck by how I tend to really be impressed by shows where there is a kind of off-camera tragedy, because you end up with these characters who are kind of broken about the thing that happened, but it's already happened and you're meeting them after. And so you sort of see the imprint of the tragedy in their lives as they go on. So in this case, the lead character in Somebody Somewhere moved back to her small town that she didn't want to go back to take care of her sick sister who died. And it's the people in this town, and this is what the show is. It really, again, is not super consequential in a big way. It's just about people living their lives, but it reduced me to tears in episode one. Just, I think, really well done. It's a Duplass Brothers joint a little bit.
Oh,
so like it's got an indie film vibe a little bit. It's not a big budget production at all. They got three seasons out of HBO, so good for them. But I really liked it. And I mean, Shrinking is a good example of a show where the terrible thing happens before the show starts. And so you get this, you have the ability to be funny and light and dark without it having the really profoundly dark thing be in the text of the show, which I think, and Shrinking dances around it in the second season very closely, but I think it allows you to create these characters that have a lot of depth and a lot of problems that they're struggling with while kind of fashioning a tone that's a little bit lighter. And I mean, Somebody Somewhere, seriously, it's like she hates her job. You know, it's a dead end job. She's only doing it because it is a job. They tell her to work better at it, and she's like, no, I don't want to be better at this stupid job. It's just, it's that kind of vibe. But I thought it was really good. So
I need to check it out. I will try to check that out.
Very good.
I keep thinking the killer should be providing the theme song.
All right. That brings us to the end of this Downstream. If you are not a Downstream Plus subscriber, we would love for you to be one. This was a full-sized episode for everyone, but the only way to hear the complete version of our next episode will be to subscribe. Go to downstream.plus to subscribe and support the show. We appreciate it. You can find me at sixcolors.com, and I appear on many other podcasts here at Relay and over at theincomparable.com. And Joe, where can people find your stuff?
I'm over on vulture.com, and you can also find me on Blue Sky at TV Mojo. That's MOJOE.
Good place to be. I'm over there as Snellzone, snell.zone. You can check me out at Blue Sky if you like to. And until next time, we'll have a very special holiday episode. I cross fingers, hope it works out. We will see you then. Thanks for listening. Bye, Joe.
Happy holidays, everyone.